Well, this is a little different today. So good morning, Sports Zonians, because we are doing this on a Sunday morning. I am Mike Aguilar. I am joined by Cousin David, and we're doing one of these Mike's Random Sports Thoughts. Because one of the things I don't get to talk a lot about on Sports Zone is not just wrestling, because obviously, you know, I've said it before, not really a fan of modern day pro wrestling, but you know, we got all these wrestling documentaries coming out, and I don't really get the chance to talk about them that much because Eric and Dave, God love them, they were not as into pro wrestling as I was. And you may have heard a couple weeks ago, I was trying to talk to Eric about one of the A&E biographies, and he didn't really know what was going on. He didn't hear about the documentaries. He said he was going to take a look at it. But, you know, we went through this last year when Dark Side of the Ring was on. It always helps for me to be able to talk about these types of things with someone who was a wrestling fan growing up, who knows about these types of things, and was as into this particular time period that a lot of these documentaries cover as I was. So that's what I have Cousin David for. Cousin David, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Looking forward to talking about all this stuff. And I just want to wish everyone a happy Mother's Day.
Yes, that is correct. We are doing this on Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to everyone. So, like I said, we've had an influx in these wrestling documentaries in recent years. And, you know, it's funny. The 90s was the time where the curtain of kayfabe really came down. And one of the catalysts to that, in addition to everything that was going on in the wrestling business, you had 1998's documentary or 1999's documentary Beyond the Mat. You had 1998's Bret Hart's documentary Wrestling with Shadows, which covered the Montreal Screwjob and that everything that led up to the Montreal Screwjob. You had a number of A&E biographies out at the time. They actually released on YouTube the A&E biography they did in like 1999, 2000, somewhere around that, on Mick Foley, which I got to admit really wasn't that good watching it in hindsight. And then over the course of the last 20 years, you know, there have been random ones, but you got two problems with doing a wrestling documentary. Number one, the subject matter tends to be a little too dense, too thorough to properly cover in an hour format. And that's why a lot of these wrestling documentaries always wind up feeling rushed. We always make the comments that it's like they're leaving things out. And then you have another problem, which is whenever you try to do one of these documentaries on a subject associated with the WWE, WWE likes to take control of everything and really control the narrative. And they wind up leaving things out that they probably, you know, they don't want to admit happened, but probably should admit happened, just to give you the full context of the story. And we'll talk about that in a little bit with these A&E biographies that you see. But this recent resurgence in wrestling documentaries, really the catalyst for it was Dark Side of the Ring, which airs on Vice, which is in its third season now. They started this, as I say, 2 years ago. And they've done a really good job skirting, at the very least, the second part of the problem, because again, a lot of the topics that they choose, and this was definitely prevalent in their Montreal Screwjob piece, it's a lot of subject matter to cover in an hour. So David, I know you feel this with me. When we were watching that Montreal Screwjob piece, yeah, they got the main story points right, but you could tell they kind of glossed over a lot of things, a lot of the context of what was going on during that time. And they really just hit the primary points without really going in depth, as I would like to see them do on a topic like the Montreal Screwjob, right? Hello?
Yeah, no, I mean, when I watched, yeah, hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, go ahead. I hear you. Yep.
Oh, okay. No, look, you know, when I watched the Montreal Screwjob, Dark Side of the Ring, I thought it was good, but I do actually think the same way. They did kind of gloss over mm-hmm. it. I was a big fan of actually Bret Hart's Wrestling with Shadows, but I think, you know, and it isn't the Dark Side of the mm-hmm. Ring's fault. It's just that it happened so many years later, where the Wrestling with Shadows kind of wasn't even really going to cover the right. Montreal Screwjob. It was just there to do like a documentary. And then they just stumbled on it, and then they changed the whole thing on it because they're like, whoa, we have a story here. Mm-hmm. So I think Dark Side of the Ring did kind of the best way it could. But, you know, it was just so long after. And, you know, they were they were also interviewing Bret Hart, that, you know, at basically the same time that he was kind of back in with Vince McMahon. So how could you really give your true thoughts if you've already kind of reconciled?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. Bret Hart is never one to hide his thoughts. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Like, at the time of that documentary, he probably did have a Legends contract. But seeing as how this wasn't too long before Bret showed up on AEW's inaugural pay-per-view holding up the AEW championship belt, the idea that Bret Hart was somehow going to hold back on his thoughts, and truthfully, I didn't watch that documentary and think he was holding back anything in how he felt. He may have, I don't know, not said certain things, but I didn't really think he was holding back anything, because if you know anything about Bret Hart, when he's in shoot interviews, he ain't holding back anything. He has embraced grouchy old man at this point.
No, he definitely goes off.
Yeah. But I think a lot of the problems that they run into is merely time constraints, and you can only do so much in a 45 minute window. And of course it's 45 minutes because if you're on network TV, you got to take out 15 minutes for commercials. But the one thing they are able to do, they are not beholden to WWE coming in and trying to take over them. And that's why I think they really have an advantage over something like an A&E biography. They can go much more in depth into truly that dark side that WWE does not want anyone to know about, but is out there. So you look at the topics that Dark Side of the Ring has covered over the last 2 years heading into this season. The Randy Savage, Miss Elizabeth relationship in the match made in heaven. That was their premiere. The Montreal Screwjob, the murder of Bruiser Brody, the history of the Von Erich family and all the tragedies that befell that family. That was a good one. Yeah, absolutely. The death of Gino Hernandez, gorgeous Gino Hernandez. The fabulous Moolah story, which is something WWE definitely didn't want anybody to know about. No. And of course, was made a big deal about after they tried to name that Women's Royal Rumble after her. Everything horrible in her past really came out. And of course, when you go into depth on someone like that, it does kind of suck that they can't give their side of the story. But seeing as how that side, you know, the true side of the story really seems like it got kind of buried under a whole lot of stuff, especially because Moolah and Mae Young had their resurgence in the Attitude Era, and everybody kind of saw them as these nice old ladies. You know, the other side of the story really did need to come out on that one. So that was the first season. And then the second season, you had the two-part premiere with the Chris Benoit story, one of the true tragedies in the history of the wrestling business. And they did a great job on that one, I thought. The life and crimes of New Jack, famous ECW wrestler. That was a crazy episode, I'll say that. Then they went into the Brawl for All, which was something WWE did in the 1998, I believe. And another cool thing that they were able to do, they aren't beholden to WWE, but because so many people from these time frames who were involved in WWE no longer work for WWE, you can get guys like a Jim Cornette or a Vince Russo or Bruce Pritchard who wasn't with them at the time, and they can speak more candidly than they would when they were under contract with them. So it's always great to hear those sides of the stories. The Jimmy Superfly Snuka and the death of Nancy Argento, something WWE definitely didn't want anybody talking about. And that was a very intense episode, I will say that. The assassination of Dino Bravo, David Schultz, and the slap heard around the world. And I don't know about you, this was one of my favorite episodes of that season. That was so well done, the way they did that. Again, definitely something WWE would not want the true side of that story coming out if David Schultz is telling the truth on that. Then you got the Herb Abrams story, the story of Herb Abrams, this renegade guy who's trying to break into the wrestling business in the early 90s, and he created the UWF. The Last Ride of the Road Warriors, a story which gets even sadder when you consider that Road Warrior Animal died last year, only a few months after this premiered. And then, of course, you had the Owen Hart story, which first time we ever saw Martha Hart on camera talking about her side of the story on that. Oh. So before we go into the ones that have come out recently, just brief, you know, I run down this list for you. What episodes really stood out to you?
I really like the episodes that I kind of learned more about, especially what was that family called?
Von Erichs.
Von Erichs. I wasn't really like a big NWA fan because it was kind of early 70s. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't that kind of predated me. So I didn't really like know that history. So kind of seeing that and just kind of being a fan of wrestling and then, you know, just watching that, seeing what Face of the Family went through, just the three of them. That was cool to watch, but then at pretty much the same, to learn something new, but then at pretty much like the same time, you're like, this is a terrible story. You know, like, you know, the only thing I really knew of the Von Erichs, and I didn't even realize it at the time, was I actually remember the youngest brother or whatever his name, one of the brothers was Twisted.
Texas Tornado in WWE. That was Kerry Von Erich. He wasn't the youngest. I think he was like second or third oldest or something, but he was probably the most talented of all of them. He was definitely the one billed as the biggest star.
And then I was, watching that. And then while they were telling that story, I was thinking, why didn't they say who basically he like really was? And then the older brother made actually that exact point. He said, instead of making this, you know, cartoon character, why didn't they just use basically the name, which was famous in basically the South. But, you know, as you know about wrestling, the late 80s, early 90s, the you know, Vince McMahon was into this cartoon-like kind of atmosphere, the Ultimate Warrior, all these wrestlers with, like, colors and, like, very bright colors and very cartoon kind of backgrounds. You know, you almost think that if they could have used the name, they should have just used his name because they would have got more play from it.
Well, I mean, my answer to that, and we said it all the time when the WCW wrestlers would come into WWE after the invasion and after Vince bought out WCW, Vince always has more of a proclivity towards pushing stars that he made as opposed to pushing stars that other people made. And I think the roots of that can go back to that decision.
I would agree with that. I mean, look at how long Sting took to come basically to WWE. It was like 15 years.
Because Sting knew he wouldn't be treated properly, and Sting was probably right.
Well, we all kind of saw how Triple H handled him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about that, actually, the idea at the WrestleMania that you have DX coming in to help Triple H, and then you have the NWO coming in to help Sting, which makes absolutely no sense when you consider the history of those characters.
Yeah, no, it just didn't make sense. And it's like, you know, anything to crap on the NWO, which, look, whether you like them or not, whatever, they actually did a good – they actually had a big impact on – wrestling, but as you
there said, there would be no Attitude Era without the NWO.
Wouldn't be. You actually needed that competition in order, and you actually needed two big leagues, whether it's Vince or whether it's Ted Turner's money. You kind of needed that. You needed these two big, companies to really go at each other. And that's unfortunate. And I don't want to get too far off script, but that's kind of what's missing now today.
I don't think
AEW, even though I've read that they are getting high ratings, nobody really knows why they're getting high ratings, but I don't think you have that same attitude because I think WWE is not that threatened yet. And I think if and when in base of the future, if they do feel threatened, then I think maybe you might see where they kind of go back to some of the better storylines and to sort of better entertain people.
Well, to kind of wrap this part up, and then I want to keep going with this. they've gotten a couple of high ratings. I know this past week was a high rating. It is basically cheap filler and stuff that they're doing to kind of hot shot angles that, in my opinion, you're not sustaining success off of the things they've done to get the high ratings. And by high ratings for them, we're talking a little over 1 million viewers per show. That's what they got this past week. And you know that's not a high rating considering the ratings that the WWE and WCW had during the Monday Night Wars. You know that's not a high rating.
No, so, that's a fraction.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So to keep going here, you know, the Von Erichs, that was one. Anything else from like season two or the first season that stood out to you?
I really like the Bruiser Brody again.
That was really good.
I just didn't know that history. So watching something that I didn't know was I could just sit back and learn about the history. I think the Dark Side of the Ring does a really good job of getting, and this is where I think, and I don't want to go too off script, but this is where I think the A&E documentaries are a little off sometimes. Not saying that the A&E is bad. I think all of them have been pretty good. The problem is that the A&E just has too many people that they're interviewing. Where I think where Dark Side of the Ring has, they keep it at a good balance. There's 5, 6, 7 people talking, and those 5, 6, 7 people really know the business. They really know it. I mean,
well, it's not just that. If I can interject real quick, it's not just that. It's that the people that Dark Side has, as opposed to who A&E has, the people from Dark Side tend to be actually have some involvement in the stories they're talking about. Whereas the A&E ones, they tend to lean more towards people of today who were fans of what was going on and who merely know the history, as opposed to having active involvement in those stories.
Right, right. I mean, I mean, you know, the Stone Cold Steve Austin one was great. Mm-hmm. The Roddy Piper was great because they, you know, you really had his whole family who participated. That was great. Stone Cold, you didn't really see much of that, but they really delved into his life. And you know, the Dark Side of the Ring, almost every single episode really hits on not only telling the story, but really sort of connecting the issues of what's happening and what happened then and what's happening now. I think sometimes the A&E stories kind of get lost is you kind of had, and look, you know, I actually watch Michael Kay's show every day, you know, and it isn't that I don't like the Peter Rosenberg guy, but why is he on Macho Man Randy Savage's biography? Like, to me, to me, you kind of got, I got a little lost in that. Even like me and Nancy were looking at it and we're like, you know, why is that guy on here? And then not only that, why did Hulk Hogan's radio show guy is on the Macho Man Randy Savage? I don't know. I'm like, you don't need any of that. You know, Randy Savage, you should have got, I mean, and I felt like Randy Savage's brother, the coach or whatever his name was,
the genius.
The genius. He didn't really say much. And I wish I would have got more from him because you're his brother. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to kind of go to what you said, I mean, the first point about liking the stories that you didn't know about as opposed to ones that you did, I totally agree with you on that. I think that's why the Dark Side episodes about David Schultz, him slapping John Stossel, I had heard about that, but I didn't really know about that. So I liked that. Herb Abrams in the UWF.
Yeah.
I had heard about that in the lead up to the show, but I never really knew about that one. And then just to watch that and to know that, like, Mick Foley, that was one of the first things he did with his career. And knowing some of the people who were involved in that, that was very interesting to me. To see. So, and it kind of, I guess with that, we'll bridge to the A&E biographies and we'll start there. The Stone Cold one was the first one that they did, as you said. And what did I text you that night? It's like, yeah, I'm going to watch this Stone Cold one, but I feel like I know everything that happened with Stone Cold, because we were, this was during the time that we were big fans of this stuff. So I don't feel like they're going to tell me anything I don't know about. And basically watching that show, it was a great presentation. It definitely represented everything that Stone Cold was at that time. But like you said, I didn't find out anything I didn't know about it. So, I mean, it was good. But then to watch the Roddy Piper one and to find out things that I didn't know that he went through, like you'd always kind of heard, and Jim Cornette talks about this a lot, how in the 80s with the Southern wrestling, the fans were so invested into the characters that there would be riots if the bad guy did something egregious to the good guy. And hey, Cornette would be talking about how when he was with the Midnight Express, if they did something to the Rock and Roll Express, they'd have to fight through like 50 different fans just to get back to the backstage area and fight through the crowds and everything like that. And you hear about Piper getting stabbed 3 times. And if one of the stabs went like 1/4 inch to the left or something, he'd be dead. Like, that shit's crazy. And that shit's never going to happen anymore because there's no believability in wrestling anymore. So the idea of something like that happen seems so foreign when you consider where wrestling is right now. You know what I mean? So I took so much more out of the Piper episode than the Stone Cold episode. Go ahead.
Well, that again, like that was just, you know, the 80s, the 70s and the 80s. My sort of understanding was of wrestling back then was the curtain hadn't really been pulled back.
Sure.
So I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence, but I'm sure since basically, you know, the curtain wasn't pulled back yet and the fans were watching this, it's possible a lot of fans didn't know that a lot of this stuff was pre-planned.
Well, they, you know what also
thought this stuff was happening.
You know what also goes in though. You know what also goes into that too though. The promoters themselves had a code where if it couldn't happen in real life, we're not going to do it on our show. So the stuff that they did was believable to the extent that if you see someone getting hurt in there, you think it's really happening to them. They didn't go over the top. Stuff like hardcore. Like their hardcore was basically an every match thing, but it was more believable than the stuff that you would see in like ECW or the stuff you see nowadays. Like they have like unsanctioned street fights on AEW every other week. Like I'm sure you know, the blood and guts match they had in AEW this week, I'm sure you've seen the end of that match where Jericho gets thrown off the cage and supposedly he gets thrown onto a cement floor where you can tell he's got a crash pad underneath him and he's falling into stuff that's supposed to look metal, but really it's cardboard.
It's cardboard, right?
Yeah. Like that would never happen back in the day.
No, it actually wouldn't. And then that's, I was watching, I'm not sure if it was Dark Side of the Ring or A&E. I wasn't sure, but it was Jerry the King Lawyer and that former actor who passed away, Kaufman.
Oh, Andy Kaufman.
I'm not sure if Dark Side of the Ring did an episode of that. And I'm not sure where I was watching this, but he, apparently their feud, a lot of fans thought that was real.
Oh yeah.
They
fed into that one. That's history right there. They made a point of making everybody think that was real to the point where they didn't even talk for a while. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that was it was on the WWE, that Treasure show that I think they were trying to find Lawler's,
crown.
Yeah, so they were watching that and they were talking about and they were actually trying to find Hoffman's neck brace and they were able to find it. This guy just gave it to them. But Jerry the King Lawler, him and Hoffman talked about burying the hatchet and they had planned to shake hands and then they were gonna end it. And then Hoffman kind of said, hey, it would be kind of cool if we kind of extended this. Jerry the King was like, but we really can't do that. So when they got on the talk show, I'm pretty sure it was David Letterman. Hoffman started like talking, like, you know, kind of kind of like, you know, we're actually going to fight again. And Jerry the King Lawler punched him, I think. And they basically just extended the feud without even going over it. And people thought it was real.
I heard a different version of that story. I heard that whole thing was planned between the two of them. And like
the way, yeah.
Yeah, well,
the way the show made it seem like it was a work, but who knows? It could have been planned.
Yeah, no, the way I heard that was they had kind of planned what they were going to do, but then at one point I think they thought about stopping it, but on air they just kind of gave each other a look that said, "All right, we're doing this." And then that's when Lawler slapped Kaufman. Accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's a whole nother thing. I know that's been covering a lot of different things. There was one thing on Comedy Central back in the 90s, which was how I first found out about that. It was about Andy Kaufman. It was called "I Am From Hollywood" or "I'm From Hollywood" or something like that. It basically documented the whole thing between Lawler and Kaufman in Memphis wrestling. And it was funny because up until that point, I only knew Lawler as the guy who was fucking with Bret Hart up until that point. I never even knew that he was a good guy in the 80s and all that stuff. And then to see that, first time I found myself liking Jerry Lawler after that. But Kaufman was a whole different, ball of wax on that one. All right. So to keep going on this, you know, we talked about the Austin and the Piper A&E biography. And then we get to the Macho Man Randy Savage biography. And, you know, you kind of, you know, I wasn't as big of a fan of this one as the other two. And, you know, I said earlier the thing about WWE likes to get involved in these type of things to control the narrative. And you brought up the point about all the different talking heads. And I'll say this, Peter Rosenberg does different things for WWE. Like, he's on pre-shows and post shows for them. He's got a couple like one-off shows he's done on WWE Network. So that's probably how he got involved on that. I actually liked Peter Rosenberg on the Randy Savage biography more than I liked some of the other talking heads. There was one actor comedian that they had on this show, Dan Soder, I think, that I liked him too. But some of the other ones, and you kind of said it, like, first of all, stop having Hulk Hogan on these goddamn things. I don't want to hear from Hulk. I don't want to hear from Hulk Hogan on these goddamn things. Like, when it comes to someone like Piper, I'm sorry, he's not the guy who should be speaking for Roddy Piper. He's not the guy who should be speaking for Randy Savage. When, okay, maybe they made up at the end. Maybe they made up at the end. But that's still, I feel like Hogan's the only one who's ever said that they made up at the end. So that'll always bother me. And then to have Bubba the Love Sponge. How do you have Bubba the Love Sponge and Hulk Hogan, who supposedly don't speak to each other anymore after the whole lawsuit thing, and the fact that Bubba basically exposed Hogan as racist with that tape he made that he sold to Gawker? How do you do that? And like, all right, the Dark Side of the Ring covered the Savage Elizabeth situation in their premiere episode, and they had Linda Hogan on, Hulk's ex-wife, because she was friends with Elizabeth during that time. You don't have her on. You have Eric Bischoff's wife, who now all of a sudden is considered a longtime friend of Elizabeth, which nobody ever knew before this. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, Jim Cornette covered this in like his podcast, and he's exactly right. Like, you know, I understand. Look, Miss Elizabeth was very instrumental in Randy Savage's career. I'm never going to deny that. But does she need to be in the whole story? The whole story? And not only do you have her in the whole story, they then delve into her relationship with Luger. Like, why? Like, I don't really want to hear about Lex Luger if this is a story on Randy Savage. Have a story about Lex Luger.
Or have a story about Elizabeth on her own.
Or basically do that. It's just like, I just felt like they deviated. And then with Jim Cornette and the host, they kind of told like a funny story, like, you know, Gorgeous George's sister doesn't want to be on
I said this to you too. She doesn't want to be on camera.
Exactly. You said that too. Yeah. And then it's like, and then it's like, we're actually going to put her off camera. We're actually going to make it seem like she's going to tell this like outrageous story. Like she's going to testify at John Gotti's trial, because, you know, and it's like, and then she goes, Randy Savage loved doing
ecstasy. Yeah. And the co-host you're talking about,
which I think you told me too. So yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Well, I was going to say the co-host on Jim Cornette's show is the great Brian Last. I feel the need to say that being an avid Cornette listener.
Didn't make sense.
Yeah.
It just didn't make sense. It was stupid.
And to show how much further that made no sense. All right. So you black out her face. Then you show a side profile where the blackout isn't as pronounced. So you still kind of see her face. And then you show a photo of Savage, Gorgeous George, and a woman who has to be the sister who didn't want her face on the camera in the first place. So that's ridiculous. But that kind of goes back to something that I had said originally, and you said this right off the top when these biographies started coming out. A&E WWE is working with A&E co-producers, so they are controlling the narrative. And you saw that, in my opinion, in this Savage documentary, because, all right, the Stone Cold Steve Austin biography, he talks about 2002 when he walked out on the company. He said, I was dealing with a number of personal problems at the time, and they didn't go into depth on that. David, what were those personal problems he was going through at the time?
Didn't he abuse his ex-wife, right?
Domestic abuse against Deborah McMichael. Yes, that is correct. Conveniently left out, because why, as the WWE, would you want to remind people of what the biggest star in their company did that nobody seems to remember? I get that. I understand that. All right, fine. You don't want to say that. Okay, fine. WWE and Randy Savage have been rumored to be on the outs for years. He was the only one of all the WCW guys who never came back to WWE. We've always wondered why. David, I know you got your thing on that one, which is a very popular item, and I'll let you go into that. No matter what the reason is, it definitely shone through on this documentary that WWE definitely still has some lingering heat with Randy Savage, because not only do you bring up that Savage used to lock Elizabeth in a broom closet when he would go to the ring so nobody would get to her, which is something that even Dark Side of the Ring didn't bring up. But then you have Gorgeous George saying that when she's cleaning his house one day, she looks in the closet and she sees that he's got a whole camera set up with four screens and the video is of her house. So why would you do that?
Because WWE likes to pick and choose what they say about different wrestlers that they like and don't like. That's what it said to me.
Yeah, and I think that's the big problem I had with the Savage one. It's like you're clearly showing that as the WWE, you are going to be biased about these documentaries, which should be celebrating some of the biggest stars you ever had in your company. And you spent the last hour of that documentary really tearing Savage down. I mean, forget about the rap stuff. Forget about everything that went on with Bubba Loves the Bunch and everything. We all knew Savage was crazy. We all knew he was paranoid when it came to his girlfriends. But now you put that stuff out there. And you completely tear the man down. The man who's been dead for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
That's just horrible. So go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
What really bothered me about this, there was a lot of material you really could have showcased. I didn't see, you know, they touched a little bit on facing the match with Ricky Steamboat, and I thought they could have done more with that. They could have showed the WrestleMania 4. WrestleMania, where he basically won, where basically he actually won the four matches, the four, you know, the tournament, which was a big deal in his career. Mm-hmm. They could have went more in depth with basically the WrestleMania 5. They could have went into more in depth with his feud with
Hogan?
Ultimate Warrior.
Oh,
Ultimate
gotcha.
Warrior gotcha. In WrestleMania 7 and 8. They could have picked and choose a lot of good stuff, but I just didn't understand. And then Harry the King Lawler is now speaking on this show, and he actually is telling the story that they didn't even know that he was leaving. And they said, and then Jerry the King Lawler said, "Hey Vince, look at the screen." And then they show Macho Man Randy Savage on WCW TV. Guess what? In 1994, WCW wasn't live yet. And there was actually no Nitro. And Jim Cornette's show actually says this.
Yeah.
What Jim Cornette, you actually heard all this.
I heard this.
You actually heard this. Jerry the King Lawler was mistaken, probably. That reference about look on TV was actually about Luger, because Luger showed up on live TV WCW. And Macho Man Randy Savage didn't leave the company on good faith, but he did obviously give Vince a heads up. Yeah. So they actually got that wrong too. Mm-hmm.
Just to go into that a little bit there. So the clip they showed of Savage showing up on WCW TV was of a Saturday night show, which doesn't track, because the only time they went live, and they didn't even go live every week, was on Monday Night Raw. The Monday Night Raw clip that they showed of Vince wishing Savage well was a month before that Saturday night that Savage showed up. And Cornette said on his show, and I thought it was funny, I love Lawler, but you know, his memory is the shits nowadays. So Lawler is very old, so I think we can forgive the man from that. But it's funny, I actually went back and I watched The Dark Side of the Ring on Savage and Elizabeth, and Bruce Pritchard even said, you know, that's not how it happened. He just came into the room and said, "Guys, Randy Savage is heading to WCW."
Yep.
Yeah. Or you actually said the exact quote, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't remember what the exact quote was. But yeah, no, the one he was talking about would have had to have been about Luger, which was, you know, a year after Savage left. So there's that. Right. All right. I'm waiting for you to bring it up. You said you were going to bring it up. Okay. The big rumor about why WWE has heat with Savage, why they never forgave him. Obviously, when Savage left WWE, he took the Slim Jim endorsement deal with him, which was $750,000 a year, which was a big thing, because Vince legitimately thought that that was his endorsement, not Savage's endorsement. And Cornette says this all the time. They were going to try to put Bam Bam Bigelow as the spokesperson after Savage left. But Slim Jim was like, "No, this contract is with Savage. If he leaves, we're going with him." So there was bitterness about that. And obviously, in 1994, when the business is going through its lowest recession in over 30 years, that's a big thing. And obviously, a year later, Nitro coming out and everything, and now you're in the middle of a war. I could see some lingering hostility from that, but nothing that would last 20 years. So you want to bring up the Stephanie McMahon rumors, or am I going to bring it up?
Up to you. I can do
it. Well, I mean, I just brought it up, so you might as well go.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, look. When I was watching the Savage documentary, and they said that Gorgeous George's sister was going to be off camera because she was going to say something, I thought they were going to go in this direction, because Gorgeous George has said on various shoot interviews online, on various online, is that Randy Savage had a interest and liking to Gorgeous George's sister. So I thought they were going to go in that direction. So I was waiting for that. And I thought eventually from that, they were going to lead into the Urban Legend. I don't know if it's true. I know a lot of talking heads have said that they heard the rumor after it happened, maybe 10 years, 2005, 2006, but this urban legend, that still hasn't really been disproven. I don't know if you want to call it a conspiracy theorist, but this urban legend is that Randy Savage in 1994 or 1995 had a relationship with Stephanie McMahon. That would have put Stephanie McMahon at about 18 because she was born in 1976. And Vince found out about it, and Savage ended up leaving the WWE in 94 and never came back. And as you said earlier, every single wrestler who did leave ended up coming back. And even Jeff Jarrett came back in 2019.
And Lex Luger came back, not in an on-screen role, but as like a nutritionist or something for them, like to help with the wellness policy something. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, yeah. So it's interesting how Vince has sort of made up with everybody except Savage. And Savage wasn't inducted into the Hall of Fame until after he died,
yeah,
which makes it even more terrible. I don't know if this urban legend is true. I didn't expect them to bring it up because you just wouldn't see it because it's not going to put WWE on a good light, and nobody wants to comment. Nobody in an A&E show is going to want to comment on that. But it is interesting that when Gorgeous George's sister did say, I'm saying something off camera, my eyes did sort of perk up because I did thought, hey, maybe they will talk about it, but they never did. So it's interesting. I'm not saying I think it's true, but
all right, you're leaving something out. You're leaving something out here, and I got to call you on this. Say what Gorgeous said. Say what you told me Gorgeous George said in that interview about what Savage may or may not have said when he was high on ecstasy.
Yeah, so Gorgeous George, in an interview I watched a couple of years ago, apparently they were doing ecstasy. And actually, A&E actually shows a scene of it when they're in the ring where they're being interviewed, Macho Man, and both of them were on ecstasy. But apparently on a shoot interview a couple of years ago, Gorgeous George expands on that interview and says that they were on a beach and Macho Man was on ecstasy, was drugged up, and apparently he threw his, you know, since he was high, he basically told he didn't realize he was telling the story, and he told Gorgeous George that this infamous urban legend is true. And then the next morning, Macho Man said, "Did I tell you something?" And Gorgeous George said, "Yes, you actually did tell me a whole lot of stuff." And then he just left. They left it at that. But I don't know. Look, you know, there was another shoot interview where they asked Macho Man's brother, the genius, whatever you call him. And apparently his answer, according to Scott, I think it was either Scott Hall or it was Bruce Pritchard who said this. He apparently responded and said, "Well, there's only two people who would know. One is dead and the other one isn't talking."
Yeah. And Lonnie Poffo's role in this Macho Man documentary was really just to be there as a family member. And whenever they press him on things, "We didn't talk about certain things like that." "Oh, you didn't? Really? You didn't?" I mean, you knew he was never going to be the one to throw his brother under the bus. And obviously that part's understandable. But if you were just going to be there to say, "I'm not saying anything about this," you probably shouldn't have been on the documentary in the first place. But when you told me that, I was kind of stunned because I didn't know that story before. And, you know, the rumor about him and Stephanie has been there for the better part of the last decade. And I don't know if I believe the rumor. He doesn't paint Savage in a good light. And, you know, maybe this is different this day and age. I feel like WWE wouldn't want something like that out there just to protect Stephanie because, you know, there was a time something like that wouldn't look good on the girl either, even though he would have been 20 years older than her at least. So I don't know. That's never really been something I wanted to think about. But, yeah, I mean, outside of that, this documentary didn't really do a lot to protect the Macho Man. You know what I mean? So that was kind of sad to say, but. Any final thoughts on the A&E biographies before we move on?
Look, I'm looking forward to tonight, Nancy and I have watched, you know, we're looking forward to watching them every Sunday because we think it's, we think they're, we, you know, some of them have been better than others, but we're definitely getting in a routine where we're sitting down and watching it. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward to actually the Booker T one.
That's tonight.
That's definitely tonight. We're looking forward to that one. I know him a little bit more because I also watched both of them of BCW, but it's going to be interesting. I don't really know his history of who trained him and his early life. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Well, I know a little bit about Booker T's early life because they did a thing on WWE Network about him a number of years ago that I saw. I got to be honest, the Booker T one is actually the one I'm the least interested in because I feel like he was at the height of his career in WCW, which is a shame because he was never more of a mid-card guy in WCW. When he came to WWE and was actually pushed as a main eventer, he was more of a bad guy than a good guy, which I didn't like because I liked good guy Booker T. When he became the bad guy and the guy getting beat up by Stone Cold in the supermarket and things like that, and the main WCW guy in the Alliance and all that stuff, I wasn't totally crazy about him. I loved the best of seven series that he had in WCW against Chris Benoit. That was like the coming out party for both of those guys. And I remember watching the vast majority of those matches, and those matches were goddamn phenomenal. And Booker T, Benoit, number of other guys you can name like Mysterio and Malenko. You know, WCW was all about the big names, the NWO, the Goldbergs, the DDPs, and guys like that. But when guys like Booker T and Benoit and Malenko and Mysterio, when they came on, you were stopping what you were doing and you were watching those matches because those were going to be the best matches of the night. So
I agree.
And I just think because WWE is the one controlling the narrative, we're kind of going to gloss over all that stuff.
Well, I will push back a little bit because Booker T did – he did become a main eventer towards the end of WCW's run. And
I want to stop you real quick because just remember the end of his WCW run was the Vince Russo days. And the last year of WCW, which was when he started coming up, that's nothing you want to write home about.
Yeah, but see, this is where I think in some weird way, since this is a WWE program, this is where I think they may delve into it because I think there is a story to tell where Vince Russo, especially the Bass at the Beach 2000, where they screwed Hogan. And then because Russo wanted to put the championship on
Booker T.
Yeah. And Hogan didn't want to give it up. So Russo made Jarrett lay down. Hogan ended up leaving the building, and then Booker T faced Jarrett after losing earlier in the pay-per-view, ended up coming back and beating Jeff Jarrett for the championship. And then that whole mess started the Hogan's suing actually the WCW, which didn't get finalized till 2002 or 2005. So I could see, because none of that happened in quote unquote, the WWE days, I could see them delving into that because that is a fun story to hear about. I don't know.
I mean, that's a fair point. I could see that. But, you know, to keep going here, so you got the Booker T one tonight. They got four more of these. It's going to be Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Mick Foley, and the Ultimate Warrior. And I don't know
order. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to talk about WWE controlling the narrative, I think the Bret Hart and the Ultimate Warrior ones are definitely going to be the ones to watch here because, you know, there's definitely been some acrimony between those guys. So, yeah, those are going to be the ones to watch. I think the Shawn Michaels one, I think we've covered. I think Shawn Michaels is going to wind up being a lot like the Stone Cold one. And same thing with Mick Foley, where they'll be good. But you kind of already know where they're going to go on those things because we've seen so much of these stories. We know so much of the history of these guys. And, you know, I got I got two of Mick Foley's autobiographies, his first two ones. So I know a great deal about this time here. It'll be interesting about how they paint the latter stages of Foley's career, because he did have a falling out with the WWE at one point in the mid-2000s. I guess the early 2000s it was. He was in TNA at one point. So it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. But the Bret Hart and the Ultimate Warrior one, that one, we'll see how much they protect these guys in that, especially the Ultimate Warrior. But, I mean, so far I think A&E is doing the best they can, considering they have to work with WWE kind of controlling the stuff. But they've been interesting so far. I'll give them that. So now we switch gears and we go back to Dark Side of the Ring. And the third season of Dark Side of the Ring is split into two parts. You have seven episodes coming out. The first two premiered this past week with Brian Pillman. It was a two-parter. And we'll talk about that real quick. I liked the way they did the Pillman one. I thought the fact that they spent basically the last half hour of the documentary looking at how the family picked up the pieces after Pillman died, I thought that was an interesting way to take the story. And to show that the legacy of Pillman lives on in his kid, who unfortunately AEW, I don't trust AEW to develop certain people, right? In my opinion, like Brian Pillman, he's in a tag team with a guy who, in my opinion, Griff Garrison, I don't really look at as a big deal. You look at the guys who have potential with them, like they've done Darby Allin right, but then you look at Jungle Boy, the son of Luke Perry. You look at Brian Pillman Jr. You look at a couple of the other guys they have on their roster with some talent. They really have not done right by those guys at all. And Tony Khan books like he's on a mix of cocaine, Ambien, and ecstasy. So it's kind of all over the place. He doesn't really know what he's doing. So I don't really trust his future in his hands. But I will say, I think, again, you can only do so much with these documentaries in a 45-minute or a two-hour format. They leave out the part that the very first match on WCW Monday Nitro was Brian Pillman against Juice and Thunder Liger. They just go straight into the whole loose cannon gimmick, him getting in the automobile accident, and then him signing with WWE. And it's like, that is a very important piece of history, that with everything that went on in WCW and the fact that Nitro is mostly remembered for Lex Luger showing up unannounced, still under contract for WWE, so everybody thought, and then the Scott Hall and the NWO and all that stuff, the fact that Pillman's on the very first match of WCW Nitro, that's important to me, and they leave that out. I didn't like that part. But what were your thoughts on the Pillman documentary?
I liked it because I didn't really know much about Brian Pillman. I wasn't a fan of his. I just never really noticed him. The only thing I really knew Brian Pillman as, he was part of the Hart Foundation,
which they completely left that part out too.
Which they completely left out, and it's kind of funny how you know, it just seems like, you know, between the A&E and the Dark Side of the Ring, the Brian Pillman, they're not really getting any of Bret Hart's perspective. It really kind of makes you think, because, and I don't want to go back to the Randy Savage thing.
I'll tell you something.
Bret Hart loved Randy Savage.
Yeah. I don't know the full story, but apparently Bret Hart has a problem with the Dark Side of the Ring, the way that the Montreal Screwjob episode was handled. I don't know the full logistics of it, but they mentioned, because they do these Dark Side of the Ring confidentials where they give backstory on the episode and Conrad Thompson actually hosts it. They mentioned that they tried to get Bret Hart on the Owen Hart one and he didn't respond to him. And they mentioned that he had a little bit of an issue with the way that Screwjob episode came out. So I don't know if that plays into it.
But. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me, because it's like, you know, you would think that you'd want to have him for the Stone Cold to talk about the WrestleMania 13 match. Mm. He talks how Randy, he gives Randy Savage credit for being the first, you know, non-big guy, because Randy Savage was big, but he wasn't 6'5". He was 6'2", and he was fast. And he kind of led the way for wrestlers in the future, like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, to come in and, and kind of change how they did things. And then it's, and then you don't even have him on the Brian Pillman episode where, you know, the Hart Foundation was a big deal in the 96 and 97 kind of storyline. It's interesting. And then, you know, I thought they cut. And then obviously the only other thing I knew about Brian Pillman was actually the Stone Cold gimmick, the, you know, the feud with Stone Cold with the gun, where nobody knew he was going to do that.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked it because it's like, I always thought Brian Pillman was nuts. And the only thing I really knew was the Stone Cold thing and the gun, and nobody knew that that was going to happen. USA got really pissed off because WWE didn't give him a heads up, and WWE was like, well, we didn't know he was going to do it. And it's just that whole special just kind of wrapped Brian Pillman in a bow, and I'm like, okay, now I get it. Now I know why he's nuts.
Yeah. I thought the one thing that they brought up that I did not know about was, and obviously they painted his widow, Melanie, in a pretty bad light. She's looked at it as evil by his kids and everything. The way that everything unraveled with his first wife leading to her suicide, that was pretty brutal. And the fact that they didn't really pull any punches on that one.
But can I just say one thing about that?
Sure.
They made her the enemy. And I get that. But I will give her credit for coming on
sure.
And kind of giving her view.
Absolutely.
But you know, what really, and I'm thinking about this now, it kind of bothered me, right? It wasn't, they actually sort of made her out to be the enemy, that she was actually the home wrecker and all this stuff. But they didn't really give Brian Pillman any fault either. And last time I checked in all these kind of adult relationships, it does kind of take two to tango. So as much as she was the villain, Brian Pillman also stepped out on his marriage too. So the
kids fair.
Should probably blame both of them. I mean, so it's like, I don't know. I didn't really like that they kind of blamed her and they didn't really blame him, because no offense, and I didn't know any of this, but last I checked, didn't he, according to the special, didn't he have like all five kids by three different like moms? So it's like, you know, he's basically to blame is just as much as she, right?
I mean, it's a fair point. The only thing I will say, and I don't know if this is true, I'm going just off the episode here, it seemed like he was a little more remorseful for his role while he was alive, and that it kind of, at least the special made it look like it took Melanie a lot longer period of time to be remorseful for her actions than it did him. Not that that makes it any better, but I'm just saying that's the only thing I have to refute that.
I hear you, but we're never going to really know that.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. Yeah. But, you know, another well done Dark Side of the Ring by those guys. And the topics they're going to be covering. Personally, the ones that I'm more looking forward to are going to be in the back half of the season. You have the ultra violence of Nick Gage, an extreme wrestler who I know Cornette has already came out and said he's not gonna watch that episode. He likes the Dark Side of the Ring guys better when they stick to pro wrestling. He said that to him when he interviewed them a couple weeks ago. The Collision in Korea, which is a WCW event that they had in 1995, which I know nothing about this. I know nothing about. I mean, I saw apparently it's considered. Where is it? I got it right here. One sec. Holds the record for largest attendance for a wrestling event with 340,000 people during the course of the two-night events. The main
North
event,
Korea,
with,
right?
North Korea. It was main event was Antonio Inoki against Ric Flair. And that's about all I know about that. So that'll be interesting to watch. They are also covering the Ultimate Warrior this year. So it'll be interesting to kind of contrast the way that Dark Side covers Ultimate Warrior and the way that WWE covers Ultimate Warrior. They are doing the family of Grizzly Smith, which includes Jake the Snake Roberts, Rockin' Robin and Sam Houston. That is going to be a very dark episode from everything I know. That is going to be, that ain't going to be one for the week. I'll tell you that. They're going to do the Dynamite Kid, who was married to the sister of Bret Hart's former wife, Julia. She's actually going to be in this episode.
Wait a minute. Is it Dynamite Kid or is it British Bulldog?
No, it's Dynamite Kid. No, it's Dynamite Kid. Remember,
Dynamite Kid married a different sister?
No. He married Dynamite. So British Bulldog married Diana Hart, sister of Bret Hart.
Right.
British Bulldog, Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington was his real name, married the sister of Bret Hart's ex-wife, Julia. Julia was the wife of Bret Hart.
Okay, excuse me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, and just so you know who this Julia is. She was the one who was the wife of Bret during the Wrestling with Shadows documentary. She's the one yelling at Triple H in the locker room after it happens. And that's
great.
that was really good. It took a lot of balls. Yeah, absolutely. That was fantastic. And that's the clip that everybody knows because that clip's been out there for 20 years now. So that's the first half of this third season of Dark Side of the Ring. The second half is the one that I'm looking forward to because you see the steroid trials of the WWE covered. And for this episode, it's interesting because they said this on Cornette's show. They got Jerry McDivitt, the longtime lawyer of WWE, to appear on this episode.
So he
is going to be on this episode. They're covering the plane ride from hell, which was 2002.
Good one.
Yeah.
Oh,
They're covering Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, FMW, which was one of the forerunners of the hardcore movement. It was a Japanese promotion in the early 90s. So they're gonna go into that. Luna Vachon is going to be covered on this, which I'm interested in to see because we both remember Luna Vachon from when we were kids. She was the precursor to your Chinas. She was the first woman you saw and you thought, God, not only is she crazy, she'd probably beat the living shit out of half the guys on the roster. And she was like 5'3".
She used to scare the shit out of me. I did not want to be in a room
with her. She was a scary chick, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
XPW will be covered on this. XPW was a hardcore promotion that was started within a year of ECW's demise. I think it was started in 2000 by a former porn star who was arrested by the government for I can't remember the word, but he's going to be covered on this. That whole thing's going to be covered. Johnny K9 / Bruiser Bedlam is going to be covered on this. Apparently, he was heavy involved in a biker gang, and he bombed a police station. So that should be interesting. Yeah, and then the season finale is going to be covering Chris Kanyon, who was a wrestler in WCW in the late 90s. He was friends with DDP. He was also a gay wrestler who never came out during his career. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. And he committed suicide.
That's not Chris Candido, right?
No. This is Chris Kanyon who committed suicide. Chris Candido was a drug overdose, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Okay. So, yeah, like I said, the second half of the season, just off the steroid trials and the plane ride from hell, I think are going to be a lot more interesting, at least on the surface, than what we're going to get in the first half of the season. I know I'm more looking forward to those two episodes than I am the other ones. But, I mean, the Ultimate Warrior one is going to be interesting to watch. Just as, like I said, to see the difference in how people who are not affiliated with a WWE production are going to handle it as opposed to the ones who are associated with the WWE are going to do it. And obviously, the WWE have done the railroad job on Ultimate Warrior with the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD. And then they released another one when they made up, which was more the light side of things. So it'll be interesting to see how that A&E biography comes out. But again, just to kind of contrast the two, the Grizzly Smith one is going to be interesting because he apparently molested his daughter when he was 13. And Jake Roberts, we all know the problems he's had with his life. So that's, like I said, that's not going to be an episode for the week there. And then Tom Billington, the Dynamite Kid, that'll be an interesting one just because he's considered one of the biggest assholes in the history of the wrestling business. And I don't know if you know this, Mick actually talks about this in his first book. Mick's first match, because remember, he came into WWE in the early mid-80s as a jobber. And he was in a tag team match against the British Bulldogs. And his first match was, like I said, against the British Bulldogs. And Dynamite Kid broke his jaw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, the one thing I will say about the Dynamite Kid is I hope they get Bret Hart back for that one, because to hear Bret Hart talk about the Dynamite Kid is fantastic. He has some really good stories. He actually talked about how the Dynamite Kid, after Andre the Giant passed away, the Dynamite Kid was sort of like the sheriff in pretty much the locker room. And then when Dynamite Kid went away, the Undertaker took that role. And he once told a story how if Dynamite Kid was around during the Montreal Screwjob, not actually the Montreal Screwjob, but when Bret and Shawn got into their infamous fight where Bret pulled the hair of Shawn Michaels, and also when Shawn Michaels lost his smile, if Dynamite Kid was there, that all that crap wouldn't have happened, because Shawn Michaels would not have been able to pull all that crap.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
But you know, at basically the same time, he was a hard person to work with. Dynamite Kid was a tough SOB, and you got to take, you know, the good with actually the bad. But I'm definitely looking forward to that episode. I haven't seen a lot of film of them, because the British Bulldogs were more in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping Bret Hart and the Dark Side of the Ring people make up, because it'll be interesting to hear his perspective, because without Bret Hart there, it's going to be tough to tell that story. I'm not saying it's not possible, but Bret Hart does have a lot of good stories about both the British Bulldog and also the Dynamite Kid. So,
yeah, at this point, I don't think he's going to be on it, because they, like, when they interview people, they tend to interview them in bulk. And I just find it hard to believe that they would have interviewed him for one and not for the other. But like I said, his ex, Julia, is going to wind up being on the show. Like, I know she's one of the heads they got to participate on it. So I don't know if that would make it better. You know who I think is going to wind up being on the show? And it just came to my mind now. Like, you know, the British Bulldogs had problems with the Rougeau brothers. And I think Jacques Rougeau was on, I want to say it was the Dino Bravo episode. So okay. I think they would wind up being on them, because they had some heavy, heavy heat at one point. I can't remember the story, but I know there's at least one story of them getting into a big old fight in the cafe, in like the lunchroom or whatever you call it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get them on. But I mean, the one thing I'll say about the Dark Side of the Ring guys, they know what they're doing. When they get people, when they interview people for these shows, they tend to interview the right people. Whether you know, you could say, hey, I really would have liked you to interview this person. No matter who they get, it always fits the story that they're telling perfectly. So I got total faith in those guys. Now, we'll end it with this. Whenever there's a good thing, you always see the spinoffs. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are now spinoffs of Dark Side of the Ring on Vice TV. The first spinoff is Dark Side of Football, which I actually just saw the first episode of that. I don't know when it premiered. I think they're going to do them back to back on Thursday nights. I think Dark Side of the Ring is going to be at 9 o'clock and Dark Side of Football is going to be at 10 o'clock. The first episode they did was Diva Wide Receivers. And the main subject of that episode was Chad Johnson. Did you see this?
Oh boy, I didn't see the episode, but I did see the ads for it, and I was like, "Wow, this is going to be another one where they get into it."
Yeah, it was a good episode. It was a very good episode. I will say that. I was always a fan of Chad Johnson's. I had him on a number of my fantasy teams when I was winning championships in the early 2000s. I was always a big fan of his. His is a very sad story, especially the way his career petered out, because that guy had Hall of Fame talent. And it just sucks that, you know, he couldn't get out of his own way long enough to really do it. But some of the points they made about things that he did and how certain people looked at them and how, you know, when you're winning, people are more willing to tolerate things. And when you're losing, the personality tends to overcome the performance. In no other stories are probably more true than Chad Johnson's. So definitely.
Terrell Owens, maybe a close second. Terrell Owens, a close second.
I guess I can see that. Yeah. But either way, it's definitely worth checking out on that. And they apparently they're doing a Dark Side of the 90s too. That's the other spinoff I heard they were going to do. I don't know exactly what they're going to do to cover it, but obviously it's different filmmakers than the ones who do these Dark Side of the Ring ones. Where's the names? It's the Dark Side of the Ring is Evan Husney and Jason Eisner. I don't know the names of the guys who do Dark Side of Football and Dark Side of the 90s. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. But go ahead.
I mean that's going to be very interesting because me and you both grew up in the 90s.
We were absolutely
teenagers. We were teenagers in the 90s, and me and you both know that was a different time. And it's probably one of the first times where we could sound like older people and say, well, it was different back then, you know, how everybody says that. It's going to be interesting how they explain how people acted in the 90s. And you look back now and you're like, oh, that didn't really age well. That's not something you should
well,
do today.
I mean, I feel like it all the time because where I work with kids who were born in like anywhere from like 98 to 2002. So I always wind up feeling like the grumpy old man anyway, being like, you damn kids don't understand the way things used to be and shit like that. But I said this at some point within the last month. One of my favorite things from the 90s that you don't have anymore, baggy pants. I miss baggy pants. I hate these freaking, you know, I don't know what you call them. The pants are more tighter nowadays. You don't have a lot of pocket room. Everything's made to just completely fit you and have no breathing room whatsoever. It's horrible. I love the baggy pants where it felt like you can fit an entire family in one leg of them. And the pockets were so big you could fit like whole books in them. I miss that shit.
90s I miss the wallets. The big wallets with the chain.
Oh, I had a chain wallet. Yeah.
That just fit, and that just went along with the baggy pants.
Yes, yeah. It was a better time.
Yeah.
All right, I think that will do it for us here today. We will probably do another one of these towards the end. You know, we'll probably do one to kind of wrap up when the biographies end, and we'll probably do one to wrap up when the first half of this season of Dark Side of the Ring wraps up to kind of see where the season went and everything. But like I said, that'll do it for us here today. Thank you to everybody for listening to us on all our various podcasting outlets, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Anchor, Bullhorn. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, no matter when you're listening to this. Cousin David, thank you for being here with me. Do you have any final thoughts, my friend?
No, I'm just looking forward. I'm looking forward to the Booker T thing tonight. I'm looking forward to the rest of the A&Es. And now that you said it, I'm looking forward to the Warrior one on both. WWE doesn't really have a good track record of giving Base of the Warrior a good show. So it's going to be interesting how both these shows kind of portray.
Well, I'll say this. It's funny because, you know, they named that Warrior Award after him. If they do anything to really fuck with him, does it take away the credibility of that award? Even though, truthfully, in his Hall of Fame speech, he said there should be a Warrior Award, which should be awarded to the unsung heroes in the backstage area. And he named a couple people on the crew specifically. And then after he dies, they turn it into this big marketing tool where it goes against completely everything Warrior was talking about in his speech. They used it for his their own purposes.
Yep.
So that's one thing to think about there. And that'll do it for me as well. I am Mike Aglioloro. Thank you once again to everybody for listening. Thank you, Cousin David. And thank you, everybody out there. We will see y'all Tuesday night on the Big Show Sports Zone.